What's going on, everybody? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Between the Tackles. I am your host with the most, Hogan. I am here. I'm fired up. I am not as fired up as our resident Philadelphia Eagles fan, numero uno, Manish Mehta. Manish, how the heck are you feeling after watching that Super Bowl last week?
I'm feeling great. You know, the second half was really boring, to be honest with you. But no, it's been a good week, obviously capped by the Friday celebration and the parade. Always fun when there's a parade. You know, as a lifelong Philadelphian, we haven't had very many of those in my lifetime. So you know, everyone's in a good mood. Just an incredible performance. I know that we're going to get into the details of, but yeah, it's great to be a Philly fan. And that's not something that you get to say very often, but yeah, today, Friday, a great moment, great moment for the people, for the city, obviously for the organization.
Well, soak it in, my friend, because I appreciated this Eagles win a hell of a lot more than the last time your Dirty Birds won the Super Bowl, because that was against my beloved Patriots. For all our listeners out there, if you were curious, our good buddy, our other host, Burgess, is unavailable right now. I think he's out, you know, going crazy still because Kansas City lost that game, and I don't blame him in the slightest. So we will welcome him back with loving arms as soon as he's able to rejoin us here on the podcast. But for now, Manish and I are holding the fort down, and Manish, let's get right into it. Let's talk about that Super Bowl. I mean, watching that Super Bowl, like you said, the second half was kind of eh, but that first half, boy, oh boy, did Kansas City look like lost puppies out in the field against a dominant Eagles defense. I even have some people going as far to say that that was one of the most dominant Super Bowl performances they've ever seen by a team. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself and put them on par with, like, you know, an 85 Bears, a 2000 Ravens or anything like that, but was that one of the more impressive Super Bowl defensive runs you've ever seen by a team?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the final score will indicate that it wasn't technically one of the most dominant performances in NFL history because of the 20-some-odd points the Chiefs put up. But let's be honest here. They completely shut down Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in that first half. The Chiefs, I believe, did not get across midfield until late in the third quarter. They didn't score until about a minute or so left in the third quarter. So there's some window dressing in the final score in the fourth quarter. But you know, when it mattered, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, neither of them had any kind of answer for Vic Fangio. And there's a lot of talk about Fangio versus Patrick Mahomes all time. Mahomes was 8-0 against Vic Fangio defenses. Obviously, that meant very little because this was, at least in the last 20 years, in my estimation, the most dominant performance in the Super Bowl. Now, we saw the Ravens back when they destroyed the Giants, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, those guys. That was wire-to-wire, just complete and utter thrashing. But for three quarters, this Eagle defense was unbelievable. And there were plays made by virtually every one of the starters. And I think that's, to be honest with you, why a defensive player didn't win MVP and Jalen Hurts did, because you could have chosen Josh Sweat, who had 2.5 sacks. You could have chosen Milton Williams, who had 2 sacks, including a forced fumble. You obviously could have included Cooper DeJean, who got the pick 6 on his birthday. Zach Bond, who got the red zone interception, and the list goes on. Just top to bottom, a suffocating performance, something you don't typically see against Patrick Mahomes. He was lost, frankly, from the first snap.
Right. And obviously, I know if anybody was cheering for a Zach Bond MVP, it was you above anybody else. And I got to admit, I got a little worried when he got that interception, because I'm sitting there going, boy, if he gets another one or he gets a big sack and a forced fumble, I was like, he can make a name for himself there. Obviously, he's made a tremendous name for himself this year with Philly. But I guess the big question that I want to ask you going forward for this Eagles team, I have another buddy who is an Eagles fan. And of course, he was high on the euphoria of winning the Super Bowl at the time that I was talking to him. But he's sitting there going, well, screw the Chiefs three-peating. Why can't the Birds three-peat? And I'm sitting there going, well, hold on. You won one. And I'll give you credit where credit's due. You did a fantastic job this year. The Eagles were unbelievable. Obviously, you take away the Detroit Lions, and arguably the Eagles were the best team in the NFC in the regular season in that aspect. And then the playoffs, they obviously blew the doors off everybody, did what they needed to do. But Is this a stepping stone for this Philadelphia team, where they have the young star power that they do across the board, both defensively and offensively? Or is this more of a, hey, they hit that, that shooting star hit really good on 2024. Are they going to have some bumps in the road going forward?
Well, I think that like, this Super Bowl title is starkly different than 2017, the first time that the franchise won a Super Bowl, for a lot of reasons. Chief among them is the nucleus of this team versus that team. If you look at the key contributors on this team, you know, for the most part, they're not going in anywhere. There's probably four key defensive players who the Eagles are going to have to make the tough decisions on. I'm pretty sure that they're going to make an earnest effort to re-sign Zach Bond, who was a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year, came out of nowhere, works perfectly in Vic Fangio's defense. I would anticipate that they would make a very competitive offer for him to return. I do think that Milton Williams, who I mentioned earlier, along that defensive line, I do think he's going to get a big payday somewhere else, which is unfortunate because he's been one of the unsung heroes along that defensive line, a very young player. I think in many respects, he could end up being the Javon Hargraves of the defensive line from 2017. Hargraves, you know, got a big payday from the San Francisco 49ers. I would anticipate to get a big offer somewhere else, and he won't be back. I don't think Darius Slay, who actually had a really good season this year, I don't think he will be back. I think he'll get an offer somewhere else. Obviously one of the older players, but still a key player on this team. And then Josh Sweat, you know, I mentioned 2.5 sacks. I think he was on the trading block a little bit earlier in the past. I don't believe he'll be back. I think the priorities for Howie Roseman will be on the defensive side to bring back Zach Bond. On the offensive side, there's really only one guy who they might lose, and that's Mekhi Becton. You know, the reclamation project from the Jets, he went from tackle to guard. Genius move, really a decision that Nick Sirianni made and kind of suggested to their offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland. But Becton played at a Pro Bowl level. I don't believe he was a Pro Bowler, but he played at that level. Really a key cog to that offensive line. I would hope as an Eagles fan that they would try to bring him back. And I think they will. I don't know if he will come back. But besides those guys, the core is intact. So I think this team has a legitimate chance to win again. You know, the dynasty stuff is fun to talk about. I know that after the game, Saquon Barkley maybe fanned those flames and mentioned, you know, why can't we be the start of a new dynasty? That's all well and good. But like you said, you got to walk before you run here, and winning a second consecutive title would be a monumental feat. And I think they're well positioned because of their core young players. Obviously their quarterback is not going anywhere under contract. So I think they're well positioned. It's competitive every year. A lot of wacky things happen as the season goes along. You know, Detroit Lions fans can tell you that. San Francisco 49ers fans this year can tell you that. Injuries happen. A lot of unforeseen you know, events occur in an NFL season. But right now, I see no reason why the Eagles can't make a legitimate run to win again.
All right. The biggest thing that I see is their threat going forward is Howie Roseman avoiding beer cans at Super Bowl parades. That's the biggest thing. I don't know if you saw that today. He looked like he took a dinger real bad off the forehead, but he was still in great spirits going up there and getting that Philly crowd all fired up. So, like you said, it looks like the sky is absolutely just beaming blue for this Birds team to go on forward with what they could possibly do if they're able to re-sign the right pieces, keep the coaching staff that they currently have and everything. Obviously, a big departure that will be coming up is obviously, is it Kellen Moore, right, for the offensive coordinator, who just took the position with the New Orleans Saints down there as their new head coach. But that being said, I think Vic Fangio is obviously the biggest one. As long as they can retain him as a defensive coordinator going forward, that Philly team is just going to be lights out in the future. Go ahead. You got something?
Yeah, he's not. Vic's not going anywhere, partly because of his age, unfortunately. Even right. If he did really want to be a head coach, I think he's climbing an uphill battle there, and that shouldn't be the case. But I think at this stage of Vic Fangio's career and life, you know, he's a Philadelphia sports fan, grew up in the area. I think he's really content where he is now, a Super Bowl champion. You know, little known fact, it's not actually the first championship parade that Vic Fangio has been a part of in Philadelphia. He was actually on Jim Mora's staff back in the 80s when he was the coordinator for the Philadelphia Stars of the USFL, who I grew up actually loving back then. So he's been part of a championship football team in Philadelphia. He just hasn't been in the NFL, but I agree with you. Look, he's indispensable. I didn't mean to diminish Kellen Moore's departure, but the Eagles have kind of, you know, cycled through a lot of offensive coordinators. I'll be fascinated to find out if Nick Sirianni, Howie Roseman, and Jeffrey Lurie want to promote from within, because if they do that, it would be Kevin Petullo, who has been Nick Sirianni's right-hand man since Sirianni came to Philadelphia. If they decide to go with a veteran option outside of the Eagles, I think their options are a little bit limited because of, you know, where they are on the NFL calendar. The NFL hiring cycle has come and gone. You can't interview offensive coordinators on other teams because it's a lateral move and teams can block you. So you're really talking about position coaches or quote-unquote assistant head coaches on other teams or guys who are unemployed. I mean, a guy that maybe might make sense is Frank Reich, who is frankly a guy who Nick Sirianni learned from and has had nothing but incredible things to say about. And, you know, he's looking for an opportunity. So maybe that's a direction they go. I would promote from within just because of continuity's sake. And I think a guy like Kevin Petullo, who's been an NFL coach for a decade plus, has kind of earned his stripes. And that's the way I would go. I don't know what they're going to do. But again, I think as long as these core players are in place on offense, their offense is going to be fine. They may not be dominant, but they're going to be fine. It was the defense from a year ago that was in shambles that need to be really renovated. And that's exactly what Vic Fangio did.
That's right. And the big thing that obviously I'll use this as kind of a transition, talking about the defense and where you left off with the Eagles there, we're going to go right into the opposite side of the field with the Kansas City Chiefs, who are obviously decimated on that Super Bowl field last Sunday, which is not an easy thing to do to the Kansas City Chiefs. They typically for the last few years have been the new dynasty of the NFL, where they just run train on everybody. That's just typically what Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, the list goes on, typically do. Now, I'm going to start this off with a little bit of a hot take, and I'm curious to see what you think about this. Watching that Super Bowl, and as much as the Eagles blitzed and destroyed them, I think that Kansas City's defense didn't play particularly that bad in the Super Bowl. I think what happened was the Eagles just took advantage of the turnovers and the opportunities that were given to them, and they were able to make it look like an absolute bloodbath because of where they were on the field. Obviously, the pick six, the turnovers, where Mahomes was just could not get anything going. Kansas City's defense, I almost at one point felt – I can't believe I'm saying this. I almost felt bad for them because they could not get off the field. Like you said, I think going into the third quarter, Kansas City didn't even have 50 yards of offense at that point. So they had no third down conversions. It was just an absolute, like I said, bloodbath from the beginning. So Kansas City's defense, they still have my respect. And the biggest thing that I want to transition to this talking to you, Manish, is like, let's look at Kansas City's outlook going forward now. A lot of people are making the jokes that Mahomes isn't Brady, get the GOAT talk out of your mouth, and that all this is over, and the Chiefs dynasty came to a crashing halt on Sunday. The fact is, this team still won 15 games this year, whether we like them or not. I am noted on here as certainly not liking that team. But the fact is, they are still one of the most dangerous teams in the NFL when they have a coach like Andy Reid and a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. How do you see what happened in this Super Bowl affecting this team going forward? Am I talking out my butt? Is the carpet pulled? Are the Chiefs done toast? Like we're never going to talk about them again? Or are they going to be right as rain going into next year?
Well, they're going to be in the mix. It's not like the dynasty has crumbled. They didn't win the Super Bowl this year. And I'm not saying they're going to win it the following year, but let's just kind of rewind to when the Eagles won their first Super Bowl against the Patriots. The Patriots dynasty wasn't over. They won the following year, I believe, right? So. Yep. I'm not saying the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl next year, but what I am saying is that as long as you have Andy Reid, as long as you have Patrick Mahomes, you have a chance. It's not like the rest of their team is garbage. It's not. And I agree with you as far as how the defense played early, but when you give up a pick six and then right after that, you give up a red zone interception and then one or two plays later, the Eagles score, you get a game that was 10-0. And then before you know it, it's 24-0. So,
right.
Yeah, I think early in the game, for sure, the Chiefs played well. They played reasonably well. It was just, you know, everyone's looking to analyze the Super Bowl. Who was the key? What was the difference? Who did, you know, who screwed up? Who rose to the occasion? You can really simplify this game to one thing. The Eagles' defensive line completely dominated the Chiefs' offensive line. The Chiefs' offensive line was kind of in shambles. They had to rearrange the decks along that offensive line. And Joe Tooney, as great of a player he is at guard, as great as he is at guard, clearly was not up to the task at tackle against the Eagles' defensive linemen. Because, look, Vic Fangio did not blitz. It's not as if he dialed up a Rex Ryan-style exotic blitz package to confound the linemen and Patrick Mahomes. This was a fairly straightforward game plan. Man on man, the four guys up front and the Eagles rotated players, but their four defensive linemen completely dominated the Chiefs' offensive line. So it wasn't this magic that the Eagles created to create pressure. They didn't need to do any of that. They kept it simple, and essentially the Eagles' defensive linemen were much better than the Chiefs' offensive linemen. And look, in that, in a nutshell, is this Super Bowl. Now, everything else stems off of that. The pressure, the mistakes by Mahomes, the return by Cooper DeJean. Everything flows off of the basic idea that the Eagles' defensive line dominated, the Eagles' defense dominated without having to blitz. And when you can do that, and I know you know this as a Patriots fan, if you rewind to the year that the Patriots were undefeated going into the Super Bowl, the Giants created pressure, ironically, with Steve Spagnuolo as their defensive coordinator without having to blitz. And that's why OCU Minora, Justin Tuck, even Strahan, those guys were the real heroes of that game. And this time around, I can say the exact same thing about Milton Williams and guys like Jalen Carter. Those guys controlled the game. Those guys were the most valuable piece to the puzzle in the game. And that is ultimately why the Eagles were Super Bowl champions and the Chiefs did not three-peat.
I love the fact that we're here celebrating the Eagles winning, and you still got to find a way to bring up 2007 and just shatter my heart. We're here celebrating you and your Eagles victory, and you still got to take a dump all over my parade of what was 2007. Okay,
I'm just saying it is a defensive coordinator's dream to create that kind of chaos and that kind of pressure without having to blitz. Every defense coordinator will tell you that is the ideal scenario, regardless of who your personnel is, regardless of who you're coaching or what quarterback you're playing against. If you can generate consistent pressure without having to blitz, you've got the upper hand and you probably will win the game.
Right. No. Of course, I had to mess with you, obviously, about that. But again, really quickly, before we take our ad break here, tell me yes or no. Is Travis Kelce coming back next year?
No. One word, no, I don't think so.
Oh, I love it. I love it. We'll find out more. Maybe we'll find out more. But right now, guys, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. All right. Welcome back to Between the Tackles. It is your host, Hogan. We are here celebrating. At least I'm trying to celebrate. My boy Manish is just bringing up Patriots losing their undefeated season when he just had a Super Bowl victory. He's winning over there. He's winning over here. I can't take it. We're going to move on to some other topics here. Obviously, we talked about the Super Bowl, all about that in the first half there. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. And any of you Philly fans out there that are on Manisha's side, I hope you enjoyed the Super Bowl. As a Patriots fan, I certainly enjoyed seeing the Kansas City Chiefs leave with their tail tucked between their legs and the misery and all the despair on their faces. Oh, it was just sweet music to me. I was sitting there just loving every second of that. I mean, I think I partied harder than half the people in Philadelphia when Cooper brought that pick six back. But we're going to do something a little bit crazy here on Between the Tackles. And I know the Super Bowl literally just ended last Sunday. We aren't even a full week out of the season from 2024. But we're going to look ahead to next year. We kind of already did that a little bit with Philly, a little bit with Kansas City. But Manish, we're going to get into some way too early predictions going into next year. And we're going to look at a couple different things that I want to break down with you, where we're going to look at teams that have either been on top, you know, your Kansas City Chiefs, your Detroit Lions, what have you. And we're going to see if they're going to go come crashing down and miss the playoffs completely. And then we're going to look at teams that maybe didn't make the playoffs that aren't on a lot of people's radars that could all of a sudden rise to prominence. And what we'll do for you listeners out there is going forward into next week and the weeks after, we're going to talk all about the free agency coming up, the draft, everything like that, that will really get into the nitty gritty of the different teams, the different divisions. But right now, we're just kind of getting crazy. We're going to throw out some teams that we want to talk about based off of either new coaching hires or players that we think are anticipating that are going to change things up through the draft with where they're at in the picks. But Manish, I'm going to start with you, and I want you to give me a team or two that you have on your radar that could go from, I'm quoting myself here, I wrote zero to hero. Who do we got that could become the champions next year that nobody's talking about?
All right, so I'm not going to take the low-hanging fruit and say the Bengals, who, by the way, I have picked the Bengals to go to the Super Bowl each of the last 2 years. So I'm not going to pick them. That's pretty easy. I'm going to go with the Falcons. You know, it was a limited sample size. I did criticize the Falcons for moving on from Kirk Cousins late in the season and really throwing Michael Penix into the fire when they were still in the playoff hunt. But I think look, it's a small sample size. Who knows? But I liked what I saw from Michael Penix. And it's a notoriously weak division. The NFC South, typically you need 9 or 10 wins to win that division. I like Tampa Bay still, but I think there might be something there with Michael Penix. And they've got the skill position players, a breakout season for Bijan Robinson. So, you know, they've got the superstar in the backfield. I think that they could win the division. As of mid-February, if you're asking me a team that, you know, didn't make the playoffs who potentially could make some noise, I really like the Falcons for a number of reasons. Like I said, the division is weak, and I think I might be a believer in the quarterback, and that's always the biggest question mark. Kirk Cousins really went downhill pretty fast in the second half of that season after playing, you know, reasonably well in the first half, coming off the Achilles injury. That's a team, that intrigues me, much like they intrigued me this past season, but with a dynamic young quarterback, maybe they make some waves, things that, don't expect, a la Washington Commanders with Jaden Daniels. So, we'll see. The other team, it's a team that, gets talked about a lot and typically does not perform when it matters the most in the postseason. This year, they took a step back for a number of different reasons. Quarterback got hurt. But I think the Cowboys, when people say to the Cowboys, what's appealing about the Cowboys? They got rid of Mike McCarthy, promoted Brian Schottenheimer, Dak is Dak. I think a healthy Dak with a potentially improved running game, we'll see if they draft a running back with their first round pick. If not, I don't know if that even moves the needle that much. I just think that they're a good enough organization to make the postseason. Now, what can they do in the postseason? Who knows? But let's not forget, even though they finished 7-10 this season, they had three consecutive 12-win seasons. So you can't just discount that. I know it's easy to if you're a Cowboys hater, but I think they're a team that's primed to kind of bounce back to where they were before, and that means making the postseason. Again, what they do in the playoffs remains to be seen, but that is the team that I'm definitely looking at that didn't make the playoffs that can bounce back and get in this year or in 2025.
Interesting in the fact that we have an Eagles fan over here praising something that the Cowboys could be doing, which is crazy to me, but it's fine.
I try to keep it real. I'm keeping it real. I've been real about, how I view certain Eagles players. I'm not a guy, I say this to my friends all the time, I'm not a guy who just drinks the Kool-Aid and thinks that every Eagles player is great and the Cowboys are awful forever and the Commanders and Giants suck. Yeah, although I wasn't a believer the Commanders for a while, but I try to keep it as objective as I possibly can. And I think if you are keeping it objective, there are a number of reasons why the Cowboys lost 10 games. I just think that they're ripe to kind of, return back to kind of where they were, which is, a playoff caliber team.
Well, if you're going to be objective, are you finally going to put some respect on Jalen Hurts, Super Bowl MVP's name?
Yeah, look, Manish? Hey, man, nothing you can tell me will compare to anything that my close group of friends have told me about Jalen Hurts. I said over and over, I was critical of him at various points during the season. This is what I'll say about Jalen Hurts. He's a Super Bowl champion. He will be a Super Bowl champion forever. You can never take that away from him. I take umbrage with the discussion. Is he as good as some of the other guys in the league who haven't won a Super Bowl? And I still believe that, the Josh Allens of the world, the Lamar Jacksons of the world, the Joe Burrows of the world, those guys, I would take those guys over Jalen Hurts. I don't mean to slight Jalen Hurts because, again, he is something that those guys are not, and that's a Super Bowl champion. I thought he played well in the Super Bowl. As we talked about earlier, I think the most valuable element of that game, the most impactful element of that game was the defense. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Jalen Hurts played really well. He deserves 100% credit for it. I just sometimes have to push back when, things get tilted too far. And they, just because he is a Super Bowl champion, in my mind, doesn't put him on the level of Joe Burrow or Josh Allen. It doesn't. I mean, I know what I see. I know what I have seen. And I see a guy who has made clutch plays this season, a guy who, let's be honest, there are some questions about whether he'd be able to connect with teammates. That has been documented, I think, pretty well over the last 2 years. But again, this is not the time to really, take jabs at Jalen Hurts. The guy's a Super Bowl champion. It's well-deserved. And he will always have a ring, or at least one ring. Who knows? He might have two.
I got to jab you because it's so much fun. And so for you listeners out there, if you're wondering what Manish was just talking about, I'll break it down for you. He's comparing Jalen Hurts to Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson, Joe. No, I'm kidding. All those Super Bowl winners.
I want to be fair. I want to be completely fair about it. Like, in private text chains that I've had with friends, I had compared him to Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, more in a jokey way, but more of the Brad Johnson ilk. And look, Brad Johnson's a Super Bowl champion. I think that the future will tell the full story. If we look back 10 years from now and Jalen Hurts is a 3-time Super Bowl champion, 4-time Super Bowl champion, then what could I possibly say? But he played well in the Super Bowl. I just don't want to take that away from him. He played well. Did have one turnover that cost him points, but ultimately those points didn't matter because of the blowout. I don't think he is on the same level as Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. And I don't think winning the Super Bowl changed that. What it changed is that he's a champion and they're not. And that can't be disputed. I mean, that's reality. But I think from a skill standpoint, I still, if you ask me if I'm starting a franchise today, who would I choose? How would I rank those guys? I would take Josh Allen first or Joe Burrow first. I don't know, depending on the day. And then the third choice in my mind is clearly Jalen Hurts.
Man, oh, man, you are just digging yourself a hole right now. I'm telling you, that's just as awful as you can get being a Philly fan, saying how bad your quarterback. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. We got insanely off topic.
I'm getting
enough
heat, trust me. I'm getting heat on an hourly basis among like core group of friends that I have about this.
Well, I'll do my best to refrain from lighting you up anymore about it. So let's go back to what we were talking about, obviously, with our way too early predictions, where obviously you had a way too, well, this is how we'll wrap this up with that. You had a way too early prediction about Jalen Hurts potentially winning 3 Super Bowls. That's how we got that part in there. So let me take a stab at some teams. Obviously you talked about the teams that you predicted could be potentially going from zero to hero. For me, I'm going to take the low hanging fruit on the NFC side of things, and I'm going to pick the San Francisco 49ers as a team that you cannot sleep on next year. I think the big thing was everybody knows what the San Francisco 49ers have been able to do aside from this past season, the seasons previous to that, multiple Super Bowl runs where obviously they came up short to the Kansas City Chiefs. But the talent on that team, led by a very, very good coach in Kyle Shanahan, is going to put them on the map no matter what. And that NFC West division, kind of like you touched on, Manish, where I don't know if I see Seattle potentially winning 10 games next year. The Rams are very much a question mark going forward with the whole Stafford Cup thing going on. So I'm not going to sit there and immediately crown them champions next year. And then on top of that, Arizona is just a mixed bag. You never know what the heck you're going to get from Arizona from year in and year out. But when I look at the 49ers, if they're able to solidify a lot of the guys on that team that you have potential questions, whether it's their contracts coming up, obviously Brock Purdy is a huge one, whether they decide to give him a bag or anything like that, or decide to move on and see if they can bring somebody in that might be a little more talented, which would be fascinating to see if they did decide to do that or want to do that. Obviously, they have other questions in terms of Debo Samuel made some news, I think, going into the Super Bowl where he said that he wanted a trade and they were going to acknowledge that. So they have a lot of questions. But at the same time, with the amount of questions they have, they still have the talent across the board. George Kittle is nothing to sneeze at. Trent Williams, when he's healthy and playing, is one of the best tackles in the league. Their running back situation, I know they have Christian McCaffrey. When he's healthy, he is an absolute beast. Nobody's better than him. Defensively, you got Fred Warner, you got Bosa, you got so many playmakers across the board. It's almost a shame that they won 6 games this year. But again, where they were so banged up all year long and they couldn't really get out of their own way, you kind of inevitably felt like they had to have an off year at some point. So give me the 49ers to potentially rebound next year. I'm not saying they're going to be Super Bowl champs or anything, but I'm saying watch out for the 49ers to return to a little bit more of a better record than they had this year. And then on the AFC side, I'm going to take a team that you listeners out there might know I picked on a little bit in the past. I'm talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars, which I know is going to raise some eyebrows out there considering I used to dump all over them. But now my new dumpy team is obviously the Tennessee Titans. I will not let up on that one. They are just the dumpster fire of the NFL. Number one pick for a reason, baby, even though it should have been the Patriots. I digress. Let's talk about Jacksonville Jaguars. So obviously the big thing going into this offseason was the very strange situation with the GM being fired and then bringing in Liam Cohen, who had the arguably questionable Duval little fiasco at his press conference. I'm not going to raise him too much for that because that was just, it's all over social media. You've seen the jokes and the memes and everything at this point. But I'm going to actually take a look at Jacksonville themselves and how they can stack up going into next year, where a couple of years ago, you got to remember, this team was led by Doug Peterson, a healthy Trevor Lawrence, and they got to the playoffs and they shocked everybody by coming back from a huge deficit against the Chargers and knocking them out of the playoffs there and actually giving Kansas City a run for their money. And I want to say either not the divisional round, but whatever round it was in that they played Kansas City, they gave them a run for their money. So Jacksonville was not a pushover by any means. So looking at them going into next year, if they can figure that offense out, if they can get their defense back to a caliber where they can stay in games, which they did a lot of times in a very weak division with the AFC South there, because again, Manish, you might agree with me on this. Houston wasn't a barn burner this year. They did not take anybody by surprise. They didn't, you know, blow anybody out of the water. CJ Stroud looked like a very, very big shell of himself compared to his rookie season, arguably with the best weapons he's been surrounded with. Stephon Diggs before he got hurt, Joe Mixon, Nico Collins, Tank Dell. Obviously, the health of all those guys is going to be very dependent on whether Houston stays on top next year. Spoiler alert, they might be one of my, you know, hero to zero picks, but I'm not going to talk about that right now. We're talking about Jacksonville. And one thing that I just want to throw out there before I turn it back to you, Manish, is Brian Robinson Jr., the receiver down there for Jacksonville, should have been a Pro Bowler, should have been arguably an All-Pro. He was unbelievable this year, and nobody on the planet is talking about him because he plays for Jacksonville. And obviously Trevor Lawrence has a lot of things to prove where he got the bag that he did last year with that contract, and he needs to stay healthy and he needs to be that franchise player. And I think if Liam Cohen can get everything in place down there to make that team cohesive and win games, Jacksonville could be a team to watch out for next year. So those are my two teams. You got Manish's two teams there. You got my two teams. Now we're going to flip the script a little bit, like I talked about. And Manish, I'm going to throw it back to you where I want you to give me a couple teams next year that either made the playoffs or have been, you know, perennial winners for a while now that could actually take a step back next year, if you got a couple for me.
Yeah, I think one team that made the playoffs but limped into the playoffs that might have some trouble next year, depending on their quarterback situation, is Pittsburgh. It's a team that started off really well. Russell Wilson exceeded expectations after taking over for Justin Fields, and then they just kind of limped into the postseason in December. Obviously didn't win their wild card game. Don't know what their quarterback situation is going to be. There's a school of thought that they prefer Russell Wilson over Justin Fields. There's also a school of thought that they're going to, you know, cut the cord with both those guys and go the free agent route. Aaron Rodgers, who soon will be cut by the Jets, who announced that they're going to part ways with him. He could be a potential option for Pittsburgh, but right now, with the quarterback uncertainty and just the way that they collapsed over the last 6-7 weeks of the season, you know, I think Mike Tomlin might be hard pressed to win another 9 games and could keep his streak, or 9 games because it's 17 now, keep his streak of plus 500 seasons going. Obviously, an extremely difficult division outside of Cleveland. That's a team that may take a step back. Really too early to tell because you don't know what the quarterback situation is. But as of right now, I think there's some serious question marks. The other team that didn't make the playoffs last year but did win 10 games that I think that might backslide a bit is Seattle. McDonald, first year, got rid of his offensive coordinator. Clint Kubiak, who I actually like a lot, is coming in, but it is a new offensive coordinator for Geno Smith. The team, you know, that kind of scratched and clawed their way to 10 wins. I could see them taking a step back. I don't know how much great football Geno has left in him. I think Geno played well at times this year, but he clearly wasn't as good as he was a couple years ago. You know, what kind of Geno Smith do we see in 2025? That remains to be seen. Those are two teams that I think will not have double-digit wins as they did this past season.
Interesting. And I couldn't agree with you more. It's going to be fascinating to see what, like I said, where I touched on the NFC West that I did with Seattle out there. That'll be a fascinating team to watch if they are able to continue the success, especially with Pete Carroll now leaving the division, finally going to the Raiders, which I don't think anybody saw. I'm getting ahead of myself. We're going to talk about all sorts of offseason shenanigans getting into next week there. But let me wrap this up by talking about the teams that I like that could miss out on the playoffs completely. And again, I hate to be that guy. I'm going after the low-hanging fruit again. I'm going after the Minnesota Vikings, which, again, they had a hell of a year. Kevin O'Connell is a phenomenal coach. He's proven it time and time again, where I think this is his second double-digit win season, where he's, you know, kind of blown expectations out of the water back when he had Kirk Cousins there. And obviously they faltered in the first round of the playoffs. Again, they did the same thing this year. But the fact that they won 14 games and were a wild card team still makes me want to throw up everywhere, because it's just like, oh, they were so good for so long. Justin Jefferson, if there's one dude in the NFL that deserves to be on a team that wins, it's Justin Jefferson. That guy balls out every weekend with guys like Case Keenum throwing him the ball. I mean, Case Keenum, I don't think has thrown him a football, but it's still, you could have no-name bums out there throwing Justin Jefferson a football, and he's going to catch and do ridiculous things with it. And unfortunately, like I said, with the division that they're in, with Detroit being the way they are, Green Bay being the way that they are, and then potentially Chicago, depending on what Ben Johnson is able to do with Caleb Williams and that stacked athletic team, that's what I'm going to call Chicago from now on. I think I'm going to call them athletic, because they haven't proven they can win. I'm not going to say they're like a good team. They're just an athletic team, because they have a bunch of athletic guys on that team. But with what Ben Johnson could do with them is certainly going to put the strain on Minnesota, and I can't see them winning 14 games again next year, especially the quarterback situation, kind of like what you brought up, where the market's going to be interesting with Sam Darnold is not under contract, whether he gets a bag from them. They decide to go with J.J. McCarthy, who missed the entire year. It's a huge, huge question mark. And if there's a guy who can pull it off, it's probably Kevin O'Connell. But I'm willing to bet that the Minnesota Vikings probably aren't going to win 14 games next year. Before I get to my next team, Manish, you look like you want to say something. What do you got for me?
I don't think Sam Darnold's coming back. I think there's a chance that Sam Darnold could be with Pete Carroll. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Oh, I love it. Hot takes. We're getting ahead of ourselves, Manish. Don't do that to me. I'm going to get distracted. We're going to talk for 20 minutes about something that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I love where your head's at there. Okay, for my next team, I spoiled it earlier. I'm going to stick with the AFC South, and I'm talking about Houston, unfortunately. I do not see Houston potentially winning the division next year. I mean, that's a big thing, is that Houston was leaps and bounds ahead of a lot of teams in that division this year, where you saw Indianapolis take a step back. You saw Jacksonville take a massive step back there. Houston has so many question marks with what could potentially happen to them because of CJ Stroud, where I don't want to say he regressed from his rookie year, but at the same time, he did not look like the same player he was, where you saw him throw for 500 yards and lead that team to multiple victories in his rookie season. And again, like I said earlier, he was arguably surrounded with more talent this year than he was in the previous year, where you had Stephon Diggs early in the season. You had Nico Collins, who at one point looked like he was going to blow every record out of the water before he had landed on IR, unfortunately. And then Tank Dell, obviously the health of him going forward is going to be a massive question mark, where his knee was absolutely shredded roughly towards the end of the season. So it's going to be a giant question mark whether he's going to be ready at any point next year with how that knee holds up or what happens to him. Again, on the same side, Joe Mixon was one of the greatest signings for those guys. He was phenomenal from day one all the way through the playoffs and everything, where they obviously shocked all of us, where they knocked off the Chargers. I don't think anybody picked them to beat the Chargers in the playoffs. But again, it's hard for me to sit there and say they're going to have the continued success that they're going to have, especially where you have teams that could potentially come up in the AFC South that could nip at them all the way through. Obviously, the one team that I did not bring up was the Tennessee Titans, because they are a dumpster fire and they will always be a dumpster fire, because that's just how I view them. And I'm always going to say that on this show, because I love doing it. I love picking the fights. I'm that guy. They have the first pick for the reason. Houston will beat Tennessee after that. Question marks going forward. That's what I got for that. So, my friend, do you have anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this sucker up?
No, I love that. I love the Texans' choice. They also have a first-time play caller. They got rid of the hot candidate from a year ago, Bobby Slowick, and they hired Nick Cayley, who has learned from Sean McVay, but he's never called plays before. So it'll be an interesting dynamic to see how he works with C.J. Stroud to see if he can bounce back in his third season.
That's right. So speaking of bouncing back, we hope the best that our buddy Burgess will be joining us next week. Like I said, when we're going to dive into so many different things with the offseason. Manish, we are officially on to 2025. I know New Year's happened a month and a half ago, but for you and me, it's officially the new year. It's the new year for football because the Super Bowl is over. It's actually the dark age of football, as I call it, the dark time where Sundays, I'm just like, I'm lost. I don't know what to do on Sundays anymore. I like to sit on my couch for 8 hours a day watching Red Zone and yelling at the Patriots for how bad they suck recently. And it's just, I'm lost. Now I have to be productive. I have to go do errands with my wife. I don't know what to do on Sundays anymore. This is just, it's not football season, and I'm going to be bitter. I'm going to be angry. And it's just, I'm going to be dumping all of the Tennessee Titans as, even more than I possibly can be going forward. That's just what I have to do. So what do you got, my friend? Do you have anything to wrap up our season here?
Well, I mean, it's 2 weeks away from the combine, so you can watch guys in shorts, catch passes, and, you know, run routes if that does something for you.
Hey, if it's almost football, it's still football to me, so I'll take it at this point. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a blast as always. We hope you enjoyed hanging out with us for the 2024 into 2025 season for football. Obviously, we have so much more football to come and so much more football to talk about. We love and appreciate all of you out there. And if you are interested in more sports and more things on everything, obviously our network that we're sponsored by is the Fans First Sports Network. Check them out. Check out the website. Check out the other podcasts. Obviously, they have amazing content everywhere. They have writers and everything like that, where even though it's not football season anymore, you can read about baseball. I think the Red Sox just did something big. They got Alex Bregman, I think, for like 3 years, which is crazy. But I still won't watch them because John Henry still owns a team. So it is what it is. It's still football season in my mind. I'm not dealing with the Red Sox right now. So that's where we're at. Check out Fans First Sports Network. And thank you for checking out Between the Tackles. As always, we love and appreciate you guys. So thank you. And we will see you all next week. Later.